Hello, I'm Dr. Sagar Lonial from the Emory University School of Medicine and the Department of Hematology and Medical Oncology, and welcome to this Managing Myeloma update on developments in newly diagnosed myeloma, considerations for improved patient outcomes.
We're going to spend the next few moments really talking through changes in the development and treatment of patients with newly diagnosed multiple myeloma. So here are my disclosures and the disclosures of my co-chair, Dr. Saad Usmani. And learning objectives are listed here. The goal here is to personalize initial therapy and maintenance approaches for newly diagnosed myeloma based on patient and disease characteristics and the latest evidence from clinical trials. Identify the most appropriate therapies for patients with newly diagnosed myelomas who have comorbidities and utilize patient education and shared decision-making to improve patient satisfaction and outcomes. Okay, so let's go through the treatment paradigm for newly diagnosed myeloma. And this really includes both the transplant eligible and transplant ineligible patients on the same figure. And the concept here really revolves around the fact that transplant eligible typically will get induction therapy, followed by consolidation with stem cell transplant and then maintenance, whereas non-transplant eligible will get less intensive induction therapy and then go on to maintenance therapy. Now, this paradigm for the newly diagnosed patients, particularly the transplant eligible, was actually tested in the phase 3 determination trial that was presented at ASCO this year and then just published in the New England Journal. And what it does is continue to confirm the ongoing benefit for early high-dose therapy and autologous transplant for the management of patients with newly diagnosed myeloma, with one of the longest progression-free survivals ever reported in a randomized phase 3 trial in myeloma of 65 months for the group that received induction with RVD, transplant, and continuous lead maintenance, compared to only 40 months in the group that received RVD and no transplant and continuous lenalidomide maintenance. So this 22-month improvement in PFS is really quite impressive and really speaks to the continued ongoing benefit of high-dose therapy and transplant in myeloma. Now, as we begin to think about staging and risk assessment in patients with myeloma, there really are two different ways to look at this. And we're going to focus mostly on the left side of this curve of this figure, which is the RISS, which uses the old ISS, including serum, albumin, and beta-2 microglobulin, as well as now genetics and an LDH. The MSMART criteria here on the right, I don't find very helpful. They are a single institution consensus, not validated prospective criteria. So the RISS really does represent the optimal way to stage and assess risk in modern myeloma therapy. Now, if you begin to look at NCCN regimens for patients who are considered transplant candidates, the preferred regimen, again, is VRD, and that is category 1 based on randomized phase 3 data, and we will go through some of that data in the next few moments. Other regimens include KRD, DARA-RVD, and IRD, and in this useful in certain circumstances section, I'll tell you, I don't consider any of them really useful anymore. And probably the one that comes up the most is VCD, bortezomib cyclophosphamide index. And I think in modern myeloma therapy, there is now no real reason to use that any longer. And so, as I said, I don't think VCD is any longer a reasonable regimen to use. And certainly doxorubicin or any combinations of cyclophosphamide to me no longer fit in the modern paradigm of disease treatment. So as we think about sort of a simple algorithm, here is something that's been put forward by a number of groups here. And that is VRD times 4 cycles, stem cell collection, transplantation, and then lenalidomide maintenance for standard risk myeloma. I'll tell you, at our center, we currently do DARA-RVD for standard risk, stem cell collection, and transplant followed by single agent lenalidomide maintenance. And I'll show you some of the data that supports that decision. For high risk patients, many groups are using KRD as their initial induction, also collecting stem cells and consolidating with a transplant, and then likely using doublet or triplet maintenance with an IMID and a PI or an IMID PI and dexamethasone. And certainly at our center, we published data almost 8 years ago now on VRD consolidation and maintenance at high risk, demonstrating some of the best long-term PFSs and OS for that patient group. And more recently, we've now switched to KRD induction and KRD consolidation and maintenance for that patient population. Now, the SWOG-777 trial, while most of us in the U.S. had adopted RVD as a standard regimen, this was actually the trial that demonstrated the benefit of a triplet of RVD over lenalidomide and dexamethasone. And this was not a trial exclusively done in older, frailer patients. This was a trial where transplant was actually deferred. And what we demonstrated in this trial was that the progression-free and overall survival was clearly better for the group that got the triplet over the group that got the doublet. But when you began to look at subsets, particularly in the older patient population, greater than 75, what I think you're seeing is that those patients clearly got much more benefit out of the triplet than the doublet, suggesting that even for older or younger patients, the benefit of VRD was improved over lenalidomide and dexamethasone. More importantly, I think it's important to recognize that when we begin to look at all patients in aggregate, that without a transplant in this trial, the overall progression-free survival was relatively short. And that's something that I think we need to continue to remember as we talk about, should we offer choice to patients in terms of transplant now versus transplant later? If you're going to do it, doing it early is better than doing it late. The PFS is significantly longer, and the likelihood of coming back with a transplant and relapse is significantly lower. And we see that both from the French trial and the U.S. trial. Now, there was a move by several investigators to suggest that KRD was better than VRD. And so there were multiple small phase two studies that were done at a number of single institutions that suggested that KRD was going to be better. And they suggested it with deeper responses, a better PFS in a phase two study compared to phase three trials. We'll talk about that trial, which is the Endurance trial, which utilized KRD versus VRD without a transplant in patients going on induction therapy for newly diagnosed myeloma of all ages. However, whether you're a believer in VRD or a believer in KRD, what we wanted to do was to look at incorporation of an anti-CD38 antibody to see whether this was actually better. And so this was the Griffin trial, which is a randomized phase two trial performed in the US that took Dara RVD induction transplant, Dara RVD consolidation, and Dara Len maintenance versus RVD transplant, RVD consolidation, and Len alone as maintenance therapy. And again, all patients underwent high-dose therapy and autologous transplant. So this is asking a DARA at every phase versus no DARA at every phase in the process. And what I think you'll see is that the depth of response is significantly better for the group that received RVD plus DARA. You can see that across here, 82% achieved greater than CR compared to only 61% without daratumumab. And this occurred at each step of the way. So 19 versus 13, 27 versus 20, 52 versus 42, 60 versus 80. And again, the depth of response does continue to improve in the post-transplant setting, suggesting the ongoing benefit for transplant, even in patients who receive RVD plus DARA as part of their induction therapy. Now, if you look at even deeper measures of response, not just CR, but actually beginning to look at MRD negativity, and I actually like to look at this at 10 to the minus 6, which is the light blue and the light orange, what you'll see is that the incidence of MRD negativity at 10 to the minus 6 is significantly higher in the group that got DARA compared to the group that did not. And in fact, it's basically double, supporting the idea that DARA not only increases CR rate, but it actually increases MRD negativity. And this is really important because we're beginning to think about using MRD negativity as a long-term metric of potentially efficacy of therapy and also possibly discontinuation of therapy as well. Now, early on, everybody was mentioning that there was no difference in the progression-free survival curves. And I think that is really because the control arm of RVD transplant and Len maintenance is so good that it takes longer to really see the benefit of adding DARA. And what we're seeing now in longer follow-up of the Griffin trial is that at 3 years, the progression-free survival is beginning to separate. And again, the overall survival has not yet separated as well. And in my mind, the overall survival is not the primary endpoint. And honestly, it's not very important. And I say that because in the myeloma world now, the median overall survival for myeloma is between 10 and 14 years. And for that reason, expecting what you do in the first 6 to 12 months to change that is really unrealistic. Myeloma has now become like CLL and follicular lymphoma, where OS is something you want to make sure isn't worse, but you shouldn't necessarily see improvements in OS based on what you do in the first year of treatment. And so no difference in OS doesn't really bother me one way or another, but certainly PFS, I think, clearly is beginning to favor the use of RVD plus daratumumab. What do we know about other trials that are looking at the incorporation of daratumumab as part of the induction therapy? So this was a larger trial done in Europe that uses DARA-VTD transplant and then DARA-VTD consolidation, followed by a second randomization of either DARA monotherapy or observation. And I'll tell you, my spin on the Cassiopeia trial is that the only question you can really answer is this right here in the red box, because we no longer use observation for patients post-transplant. And so I really struggle with what to do with the long-term follow-up here. I don't believe the PFS data from this trial, but I do believe the differences in response and depth of response early on that the addition of DARA may contribute to standard therapy in Europe. And that's really listed here. What you'll see is greater than CR plus MRD negativity rates, 33 versus 19%. And more importantly, sustained MRD negativity is significantly higher in the group that got DARA, 50% versus only 30% in the group sustained for 1 year, and sustained for 2 years is 35% versus 18%. So almost double sustained MRD negativity in the group that received DARA as opposed to VTD transplant and no DARA at all. Now, if you begin to look at PFS, and this to me is really quite intriguing, what it says is it's not just a matter of achieving MRD negativity. It's achieving MRD negativity with the right treatment. And the reason I say that is if you look at 1 and 2 year MRD negativity, what you'll see is that the group that got DARA and MRD negativity had a longer PFS than the group that did not get DARA, but also achieved MRD negativity. So the sustainability of MRD negativity in the non-DARA group is much shorter. And this is really critically important in my mind, because it tells you that MRD alone is not the endpoint. It's sustained MRD negativity and what treatments you use to get to MRD negativity overall. Now, if you begin to look at the MRD negativity and maintenance, and this data I have a lot of trouble with, again, for the reasons I told you before, that I'm not sure what to do with patients who got observation. But more importantly, I think for transplant-eligible patients, the conclusions, at least in my mind, are RVD or KRD or DARA-RVD certainly represent the standards of care for patients in newly diagnosed myeloma. I don't agree with the VCD approach. I don't agree with VTD plus DARA unless you're in a place where you can't use lenalidomide. I think we are going to be adding DARA for certainly the standard risk. The high risk is certainly a big question. In terms of maintenance, for standard maintenance, I think the determination demonstrated the benefit of continuous lenalidomide maintenance. And I think several trials, including the Forte trial, have now showed the benefit of an IMID plus a PI for high risk maintenance. And again, the question is going to be, do you add DARA for MRD positive patients post-transplant? That's being addressed here. And how will the bispecifics and CAR-Ts work in terms of consolidation as well? Those are certainly future directions for us to evaluate. Now, there's another trial that we discussed actually in the Q&A, and this was the MASTER trial, which used DARA KRD, standard DARA, standard KRD, with 56 once a week dosing, which is basically equivalent to 2027, or is basically from an efficacy perspective is similar to bortezomib. And what you'll see is they use this MRD assessment by NGS to consider stopping therapy. And so they call this MRD sure at these various time points. And these time points were assessed every 3 months, but more importantly, they were at a depth of 10 to the minus fifth. So it's not what I would consider to be appropriately deep endpoints for thinking about discontinuation of therapy. Now, if you look at DARA KRD overall, there were some deaths that occurred in this, mostly infection or sudden cardiac death. There were a couple, one patient with atrial fibrillation, 3 patients with PE. But in general, the adverse events are not dissimilar for what you'd expect for a KRD regimen or a daratumumab-based regimen in the context of newly diagnosed myeloma. If you look at the depth of MRD assessment, you can see here in all patients, about 80% achieved MRD negativity at 10 to the minus 5, and about 66% achieved it at 10 to the minus 6. If you begin to look at it by risk, what you'll see is that achieving these deep responses was almost independent of risk, which is something that I think all of us are struggling with a little bit, honestly. But this was a very small phase 2 study, so I think it's too small to be able to feel confident that the risk, the likelihood of achieving MRD negativity is similar based on standard risk versus high risk. If you look at the progression-free survival, and remember the median follow-up was only 18 months in this trial, what you'll see is that if you had high risk, and many of these patients actually discontinued therapy, that the relapse rate was actually quite high. More importantly, if you didn't have high risk and you discontinued therapy, you were relapsing as well. So again, to me, the idea of stopping seeing two time points 3 months apart and 10 to the minus five really doesn't make sense. Overall survival is not a surprise that it's pretty good for most of these patients, but really PFS is what we're shooting for. And in my mind, this tells me that we shouldn't use these two metrics to make decisions about discontinuation of therapy. So let's go to a case, 58-year-old gentleman who presented to his local physician with anemia, hemoglobin of 9.4, GI workup was negative, persistent anemia noted with good iron stores, referred to a hematologist, had an elevated total protein, normal albumin, LDH and calcium and creatinine are normal, about 1.1 grams of an IgG kappa, 24-hour urine shows 300 milligrams per 24 hours of a kappa light chain. Serum free light chain showed a kappa light chain of 1200 with a free lambda of 4.5 with a beta 2 of 2.4. Marrow had about 40% plasma cells and FISH showed hyperdiploidy only, and the PET CT was positive for lytic lesions on exam. So based on these findings, what is the RISS stage for this patient? A, RISS stage 1, B, RISS stage 1A, C, RISS stage 2, D, RISS 2A, E, RISS 3, or F, RISS stage 3A? Take a moment to answer. I will tell you that the correct answer is A, RISS stage 1. The ones of you that chose the A, B, and C, or 1 versus 1A, that doesn't exist in the RISS any longer. That was the Dury Salmon staging. A's do not exist in RISS, so it's either stage 1, 2, or 3. With a low beta 2, a normal albumin, normal genetics, and a normal LDH, that puts it at an RISS stage 1. Based on his risk level, please select your induction treatment of choice, RD, VCD, RVD, KRD, RVD DARA, or KRD plus DARA. Take a moment to answer. So the patient was diagnosed with RISS stage 1 disease with a low beta 2 and normal genetics. And again, at least at our center with standard risk myeloma, we would use RVD plus DARA. Now, the question that often comes up is, well, if you use DARA upfront, are you going to have DARA available in the relapse setting? And at least at our center currently, we're not giving DARA as consolidation or maintenance. So we're only giving it for that first four cycles of therapy, and then giving transplant as consolidation and single agent lenalidomide as maintenance for the high-risk patients. So yes, you can reuse DARA down the road if you need to. We're waiting on longer follow-up from larger trials to really tell us whether the addition of DARA in the consolidation and maintenance phase really offers significant benefit. But more importantly, in the RVD 1000 series that our group published about 2 years ago now, where we treated 1,000 consecutively patients with RVD transplant and risk-adapted maintenance, what we showed was that for standard-risk patients, the median progression-free survival was almost 80 months. And we updated this data at ASCO just a week or so ago. And so, at least in my mind, you really have to show compelling PFS prolongation to justify the addition of DARA to LEN in the context of a standard risk myeloma patient post-transplant. So physician and patient decided on DARA plus RVD. After four cycles, he's in CR with normalization of his light chains. At this point, what would you recommend? Stem cell collection and transplant, stem cell collection and delayed transplant, continue treatment and not consider transplant, or refer for allotransplant due to the patient's age. Recommended stem cell collection and transplant, which would have been my vote as well. Recommended stem cell collection and delayed transplant. Again, I think the determination study does really support the use of early auto transplant to prolong that first remission to almost 65 months. That's 5.5 years now on average. And again, if you're standard risk, it's almost 80 months. And there was a small number of you all that said allotransplant. I don't know many of us are doing allotransplant in patients with myeloma anymore, unless you live in Germany, where they seem to do a lot of allotransplants in the context of multiple myeloma. So patient elected to proceed with stem cell collection and then transplant, currently on LEN maintenance, 10 milligrams days 1 through 21, Q28 days, 4 years is into ongoing MRD negative complete remission. So let's switch gears a little bit and talk about induction and maintenance therapy for patients with transplant ineligible multiple myeloma. So there really are sort of two paradigms here. One is RVD light times 8 to 12 cycles. That was based in part on a modification between the SWOG study and the group at Mass General, and we'll see that data. And the alternative is DRD, which is Dara-Len-Dex. We'll talk about that and the Maya trial as well. And again, in both of these, lenalidomide or DRD until progression. So what are the NCCN recommendations? Again, VRD is a category one, Dara-Len-Dex is a category one, and Dara-Bortezomib-Melphalan-Prednisone is a category one based on a trial from Spain. I don't think any of us really do that anymore in the US, but certainly there is a randomized trial suggesting benefit there. Again, I like to avoid the use of cyclophosphamide at all, and so I don't think that these ones under useful circumstances really do offer much benefit for patients any longer. So here's the data on RVD light, which is again from the group at Mass General. They used weekly bortezomib, lenalidomide at 15 milligrams and dose reduced dexamethasone, high overall response rate, high VGPR or better. And the median PFS in this very small study of only 53 patients was about 35 months. So not dissimilar from what we saw in the SWOG 777 for RVD, but it seems to be a little bit better tolerated than RVD in the SWOG 777, particularly for older patients. What about the endurance trial? This is the one that I mentioned earlier. This is VRD versus KRD. This question was really trying to prove that KRD was better than VRD in all patients. So this was not just older or younger patients. This was all patients. There was no transplant in this. And then there was a second randomization to either maintenance lenalidomide for 2 years or maintenance lenalidomide continuously until progression. So that second randomization, we don't have data, but we do have data on the first one. And what you see here is that the PFS from induction is no different between BRD and KRD. And what it suggests to me is that if you don't use a transplant early on in a standard risk patient population, there is no real benefit for KRD over VRD. They are equivalent. And in fact, if you look at adverse events, the real difference was that in KRD, you got cardiac, pulmonary, and renal toxicity, and in VRD, you got peripheral neuropathy. I think most of us are used to using VRD now, and so adjusting this is a little bit easier for us. Very few patients got grade 3 peripheral neuropathy, but certainly something that can be very challenging for patients overall. On the other hand, what you saw was grade 3 and 4 cardiac, pulmonary, and renal toxicities that can be limiting on therapy in some patients as well. Now, the SWOG 1211 study is a newly diagnosed trial for high-risk myeloma. This was looking at VRD versus ELO VRD only in high-risk patients. There was an induction phase and then a maintenance phase. And again, no transplant here, which I think in hindsight was likely an oversight. Because now in Europe, we know that they're recommending 2 transplants for patients with high-risk myeloma. In this one, they're only recommending, they're recommending no transplant. But when we look at differences in progression-free survival, what we see is no difference in PFS. There's a hint towards an improvement in OS, but it's not really statistically significant. And so in a purely high-risk patient population, the addition of ELO to RVD does not appear to move the needle in terms of progression-free survival or overall survival. And again, median is about 25, 26 months, somewhere in that ballpark there. So this didn't really raise to the level where we needed it. And I think we now know that everybody would recommend transplant for those high-risk patients, particularly in first remission. Now, the Alcyone trial was a trial that I mentioned earlier using bortezomib, melphalan, and prednisone versus Dara, bortezomib, melphalan, and prednisone. This is a complicated trial in that the group that got Dara actually got maintenance therapy, whereas the group that got VMP did not get maintenance therapy. Remember, that was how the VMP regimen was used originally, predominantly out of Spain. And if you look at it, clear benefit for the addition of Dara. Some of this may be a maintenance effect. Some of this may be Dara in induction, both in terms of progression-free and overall survival with a median follow-up of about 40 months. So clearly better than VMP, but none of us really use VMP anymore. And if you look at adverse events, the use of Dara does increase the number of infections, and particularly pneumonia. That is something that I think we all need to be aware of and use appropriate prevention and prophylaxis to potentially reduce that risk of complications. But I think the trial that really sort of changed the landscape for the older, frailer patient was the Maya trial. And Mayo is a randomized phase 3 trial of Darolendex versus Lendex in about 700 patients who are older and transplant ineligible. Now, they use 65 as the cutoff, but I will tell you that about a third of the patients enrolled in this trial were over the age of 75. So it really did represent a good spectrum of who patients are in the world of myeloma, older, frailer myeloma. And again, what you'll see here are responses clearly better in the group that got Dara compared to the group that did not, 93 versus 81. If you look at 56-month follow-up, 93 versus 82, with much more patients achieving CR and VGPR in the Dara group compared to the group that did not get Dara. And in fact, this response rate looks a little better than Lendex in the first trial or other trials looking at Lendex in older, frailer patients as well. If you now begin to look at PFS and OS, big differences favoring the Dara group, both in terms of PFS, median PFS is about 60 months, so about 5 years. And again, if you look at the median PFS on the Lendex arm, about 34 months, which is about what you'd expect for Lendex. But even more importantly, both PFS and OS were better in the group that got Dara Lendex compared to the group that just got lenalidomide and dexamethasone. And at least doing what statisticians tell us never to do, comparing trials against each other, this is far superior to anything that's ever been reported with RVD or VRD in the older, frailer patient population to date. Now, what about the COLUMBA trial? The COLUMBA trial was a randomized phase 3 trial looking at sub-Q Dara versus IV Dara in an effort to try and make it a lot easier for patients. And you can see 522 patients, single agent Dara, almost all of these were in the relapse setting. And what you'll see here overall is no difference in progression-free survival and no difference in overall survival, telling us that you can easily substitute out sub-Q for IV. And in fact, the adverse event profile was much better in the sub-Q group than in the IV group across the board. And here it is, IV to sub-Q adoption during the COVID-19 pandemic. Certainly at our center, we switched immediately after approval, but certainly COVID helped to try and shorten paid time. Patients were in the infusion center to reduce their risk of potentially getting COVID during an infusion center visit across the board. So I think when we talk about transplant ineligible patients, the combination of VRD is a standard. I think that Dara Lendex certainly has replaced it. There are trials looking at Belamaf in combination with Lendex using a BCMA-directed therapy. And in fact, the DREAM-2 study demonstrated that Belamaf alone had single-agent response rates in refractory myeloma. And the real question is, can you add it with Lendex to try and improve outcomes across the board? So this is data on a trial that Dr. Usmani is leading, looking at Belamaf in combination with Lendex or with VRD with different doses and schedules of Belamaf. And what I want you to notice is it's not the 2.5 mg per kg given every 3 weeks. It's 1.9, 1.4, 1.0. And the schedule is changing from Q6, Q8, Q9, Q12, Q3, Q4. So looking at lots of different permutations on this. And what I think you'll see quite nicely, actually, is that the adverse events really do drop as you begin to think about alternative doses and schedules. You can see here, corneal adverse events leading to discontinuation are zero in at least three of the groups here. And in fact, if you look at, more importantly, the response rates, what you're beginning to see is response rates that are beginning to approach 100% overall response rates here, with about half the patients achieving CR, depending upon the dose and schedule of Belamaf that was used. So certainly exciting data coming on the horizon, needs to be validated in larger phase 3 trials, but certainly suggests there may be other regimens using immune therapies that would be better than Lendex alone in an older, frailer patient population. So in terms of take-home messages, again, VRD light and DRD are standards of care. Dara-based combinations are FDA approved and are part of the guidelines. I think RVD Bella, RVD Dara for older, frailer patients, I'm not sure a quad really is the right way to go. And the Dara Lendex looks so good for standard risk patients. It's hard not to use it, but certainly for high risk older patients, thinking about alternatives, whether Bella is part of it or not, is certainly an interesting approach. And then are there ways to discontinue therapy for older patients to reduce the morbidity of treatment on them? This certainly is something that I think we need to look at in a little greater detail as well. So let's look at case 2, 82-year-old female presented after workup for back pain. Initial imaging showed eidetic bone disease. MRI showed no extramedullary myeloma, but did have a compression fracture in L2. Hemoglobin was 9.9, LDH was normal, creatinine is normal, beta 2 was 4, albumin is 3.6, SPEP had about 3.2 grams of an IgG kappa protein, free kappa was 300, lambda of 2.4, 30% clonal plasma cells, FISH shows 1Q deletion and duplication of 1Q, so one extra copy of 1Q. So again, the key parts are normal LDH, beta 2 of 4, albumin of 3.6. So based on these findings, what is the RISS stage for this patient? ISS stage 3, RISS stage 1, ISS stage 1, RISS stage 2, or RISS stage 3? Take a moment to answer, please. That is correct. A few of you answered RISS stage 3. My guess is that maybe because of the 1Q. 1Q is not in the RISS staging. And this was only one extra copy, not two extra copies of 1Q. Deletion 13, remember, is no longer a high-risk feature any longer. It's considered to be standard because it occurs in about 50% of newly diagnosed myeloma. So what would you choose as the best treatment option at this time point? RD, MPV, MPT, BRD, DRD, KRD, or VRD plus DARA? You know, this 82-year-old may be very robust, but certainly a quadruplet in an older, frailer patient may be a little bit challenging. For the older, frailer patient, and this actually was my patient, we actually elected in this case to use DRD with sub-Q dosing of DARA and 20 milligrams of weekly DEX. She achieved a VGPR after 4 cycles and tolerated treatment well. After her 4th cycle, she asked about how long she needs to stay on treatment. So based on the Maya trial, what would be your best response to her question? Continue treatment for 12 months and then stop. Continue treatment until reaching CR. Go 2 cycles beyond it. Continue with Len until progression. Continue with Len and Dara until progression. What did the Maya trial do? Obviously, toxicity plays into all of this, but the Maya trial continued both Len and Dara until progression. Most patients, if they discontinued anything, they discontinued the Len and stayed on Dara because it's once you get to once a month, it's so easy. But certainly this 82-year-old patient that I took care of stayed on both, tapered off her dexamethasone at 12 months. Len was reduced to 10 milligrams based on the counts, and she's an ongoing CR 5 years into treatment.
Do you routinely test for MRD, and are you using MRD as a guide to treatment in your practice? Do you see this as something the community practitioner should consider incorporating into routine practice? So I am utilizing MRD testing as a prognostic tool right now, post-induction and post-transplant. I'm not escalating or de-escalating treatment outside of the context of clinical trials. For patients who are interested in doing that, I am offering them clinical trials where they'll be able to do that, whether it's the SWOG 1803 study that's looking at the duration of treatment, there are other frontline strategies where, we're giving a certain number of cycles of induction or post-transplant treatment and stopping treatment. All of those kind of questions are being asked in clinical trials. I would be offering those as an option. Should community practitioners be considering incorporating MRD testing in routine practice? My answer is yes, because we do need to provide better prognostic information for our patients. As we move forward, our discussions are moving away from getting patients to CR or better to getting patients to MRD negative status. So, picking the right treatments that get your patients to that MRD negativity status is something that we're going to be talking about a lot more in myeloma. We're already doing this in the academic setting, but something that will routinely be done in the community as well. So another question I have is, can you give daratumumab lenalidomide maintenance after VRD induction in high-risk disease? So we don't have any data to support that right now. I think the standard of care approach, again, based on single institution data as well as phase 2 data, is a PI IMiD-based post post-transplant maintenance for high-risk patients. And I've shared some of this data with all of you as well. All right. For high-risk patients, you know, who are transplant ineligible, would you suggest RVD or DRD and why? All right, so this is a very, you know, controversial question because we don't have any, you know, frontline data in these patients. And, for high-risk patients, there were only about 14% high-risk patients in the MAIA experience. So head-to-head comparisons have not been done. I still favor RVD for high-risk patients because of the PI-IMiD combination having shown to be, you know, most efficacious for that subgroup of patients and the existing data in the SWOG 1211 study for high-risk patients. However, you know, there is a cooperative group setting study looking at RVD and DRD that will be starting off later this year, being led by the SWOG Myeloma Committee. So we will probably get some guided post or answers, for that particular question in the next 3 or 4 years. But right now, you know, I think, you know, my personal bias is still towards, IVD. How would you measure response in multiple myeloma that's primarily bone disease on PET? That is, you know, M protein is very low. So, you know, for those patients, you know, obviously, you know, looking at PET-CT responses would be something that we do. There are, you know, some guidelines around this. The International Myeloma Working Group has published, imaging guidelines around this. I think the paper was published maybe 2 or 3 years ago. So, you know, in my practice, that's something that I follow. It can be a challenge with insurance companies, and we have to, you know, do an appeal each time for some patients, but, you know, that's the only way to follow disease in those patients. Okay. The other question is, do you stop maintenance treatment in high-risk disease after 2 years? My answer is no, because what makes high-risk disease high-risk is the likelihood of falling out of remission. So, you know, our current approach is to continue treatment for those patients. At a future time point, you know, if we are able to get patients to, you know, assist sustained MRD negativity at a very deep level, 10 to the minus 6, and it's sustained, we may think about asking that question in clinical trial. Is it okay to stop treatment for those patients? But, you know, the standard of care approach is to continue to give the patients maintenance treatment.
So with that, I think we'll stop and thank you very much for your attention and appreciate your joining us today, and thank Dr. Usmani for a great presentation as well. Thank you.